Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you live from sunny, hot Southern California. Man, I hope you're having a great day. The Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player help you stay at the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Oh, it's a he said. No, that's not all that I said. He said. That's Baker Mayfield, and here we go again. Now, for the record, I have been the guy, the voice of reason, saying, I like Baker. I would have taken Sam Darnold ahead of Baker, but that's not because I don't like Baker. I just like Sam Darnold better. But I do like Baker. And I've also said time and again, Baker Mayfield, if he's going to work, he not only has to work at a team that hasn't seen much success in a long time, he also would really work in Cleveland. I think he might have worked in Oakland as well, to be honest. But, you know, a franchise who hasn't seen success since they were reinvented, a franchise who won one game in 2 years combined, in a city who has previously lost an NFL team and has lost their greatest star ever, not once, but twice, Baker Mayfield embracing all that is Cleveland, all that is the underdog status, and talking trash to anyone and everyone, if it's going to work, that's where it's going to work. And the other part of the logic kind of behind it, look, Baker's a good football player. It's not just that he can talk it, he can walk it as well. But it's one thing to comment on other people commenting on his game and his team. It's a whole other thing to now be perceived as taking shots at other teams. There's a new GQ article in which Baker Mayfield says, quote, I cannot believe the Giants took Daniel Jones. Blows my mind. Some people overthink it. That's where people went wrong. They forget you got to win. Either you have a history of winning or being the guy for your team. Or you don't. Now, Baker clarified on Instagram just moments ago on his Instagram page, at Baker Mayfield. That's not what I said. Just so we're clear, I said I was surprised I got drafted number one. Then there was a talking about the flaws in evaluating quarterbacks where I brought up winning being important. Reporters and media will do anything to come up with a clickbait story. Heard nothing but good things and wish nothing but the best for Daniel. Pat Shurmur responded. He's the head coach of the Giants, who, of course, selected Daniel Jones. Quite frankly, on our list of issues of the day, it really doesn't matter what Odell or Baker said. By the way, Odell Beckham Jr. in Sports Illustrated said, this wasn't no business decision. This was personal. They thought they sent me to die. Pat Shurmur went on. That's not original commentary, is it? Baker is the latest in a long line of critics of that pick. If I were Dan, I wouldn't even pay it any mind. So, look, here's where I credit Baker, okay? And whatever clarification was needed, he said couldn't believe you'd pick a guy number one who has a 15-17 record. It wasn't original commentary. But of all people who should understand the context of the team in which you play for, who better than Baker Mayfield? Yes, he evolved and improved after he left Texas Tech, but the personnel and the coaching staff and everything was better at Oklahoma. That's why he had a better surrounding cast. That's why he won more games. If anyone, Baker Mayfield should be the guy that says, hey, I actually feel for Daniel Jones. I do. Here's a guy, we've misevaluated quarterbacks in the past, some based on winning and losing, some based upon other stuff, and fans aren't always fair about it. But that's not what he said. And while this is Baker, and he's okay walking into every stadium and being hated, you know, walking into every restaurant outside of Cleveland and being despised. Every meeting with him and other teams, we're going to make the assumption that Baker Mayfield isn't saying the nicest thing is about other people. That wouldn't make him unique, by the way. Many of you do the same thing to people in your form of work. People do it in my form of work as well. We go to the Super Bowl, the Final Four, at an NFL game, and we see somebody on the road at a practice. Music can tell you. They all say the greatest. Man, I really like your show. I know. I don't work for your network, and I never say it out loud, but I love your show. I listen all the time. All the time. First time, long time, Gottlieb. And then, of course, when they're with their guys, they're like, Gottlieb, stinks. Stinks. Haters be hating, I believe my man Dan Dockett says. That's the way it works. So I don't think that's... I actually think there's something to Baker Mayfield, who's, though he says it wasn't the full context of the quote, he did choose to talk about another quarterback from another team, another franchise, and one, of course, who's being thrown through the ringer. Right? So he did do that. And who knows better about the pressure of being a top pick? Who knows better about trying to earn a starting spot from a veteran? Who knows better about being underrated and undervalued than Baker Mayfield, who, even though he was a Heisman Trophy winner and the number one overall pick, it did always feel like it was an upset story when he won things and did things. There's just a lack of perception of self when you say these things, even if it wasn't in full context. Even if it wasn't. But that doesn't mean to me that I think Baker's not going to make it. I just think you got to make sure that this is the guy you want to be. And I'm not sure Odell Beckham Jr. wants to be that guy. You know? Because OBJ is a beloved figure because of his catch, because of the hair, because of the smile, because of the flamboyance of him. And I think that lovey stuff goes away the second he starts throwing trash cans and going crazy, as some people think he'll do if he's not named a starter with the Oakland Raiders, which is just another team for a guy who didn't finish out his rookie contract in its entirety. You know, I feel like Odell Beckham Jr. this year is going to be a little bit like when LeBron James, there's a Clevelandite, was first in Miami. He struggled with being the villain. That's not who he is. I don't think Odell Beckham Jr. is the villain. OBJ has the floppy hair for a reason. He wants to be liked. He does the catches and posts them out because he wants to be liked. He wants to be admired. And he is. He wants to do things that no one else has done on the football field. So I feel like this is LeBron or maybe even KD in a super nice guy who's kind of quirky, wearing a black hat he's not used to wearing, thinking, man, this black hat really fits well. And then all of a sudden the season starts and he doesn't want to talk about the quirkiness anymore. You know, everybody says, like, I can be a, some guys absorb being the bad guy more. I think Baker does. I don't think OBJ does. Baker essentially is a pro wrestler, man. I was even watching. Do you watch, Ryan, do you watch American Ninja Warrior?
I have on occasion. I wouldn't say I'm like diehard, seeing every single episode, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so there was last night, there was American Ninja Warrior. There was a guy who was only 19 years old and some low-level professional wrestler, but it's the same kind of flamboyance and the same kind of act you see from Baker Mayfield. So I think Baker Mayfield is got a professional wrestler persona. I think he's just the shot of adrenaline that Cleveland needs, maybe even the NFL needs. Does that mean it'll work? I don't know. I think it'll put up some yards because clearly they're going to try anything they can to put up yards, including putting them on the back of a huge catamaran yacht and figure out a way to go somewhere else in the world for the last week and a half of a vacation, right? That's what it feels like to me.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Chris Sims joins the show. You can, of course, see him on NBC Sports, whether it's Sunday Night Football Night in America or whether it's Notre Dame football, pro football talk. He's kind enough to spend some time with you. You played for Gruden.
Right.
considering this is his big offensive acquisition. He's a superstar talent. They laid out a ton of financial resources to get him.
Right.
At what point is Gruden pushed to the point where, like Mayock, where you're like, dude, in or out? I'm so furious here.
Well, I got to think that Mike Mayock doesn't make that comment the other day without John Gruden kind of giving it an okay, like, hey, man, yeah, I think, you know, we got to say something. We got to address this a little bit. We can't keep dealing with these shenanigans every other day. So I would think that Gruden was a part of that. I just heard you say, you know, Gruden's playing good cop, Mayock's playing bad cop. I do think you're spot on there all the way. First off, you know, as you know, or anybody out there, this is, you said it, it's the big signing of free agency, or trade, we should say. And it's of a guy that we know has a troubled history a little bit with showing up to meetings or talking about teammates and or even off-the-field troubles. But John Gruden stood up at a table and wanted this guy on his football team. So I think they're going to do everything possible to make sure that this move looks good in the eyes of fans and NFL media and everything like that. And I really don't think they'll continue to kind of roll out the red carpet and really kind of placate to his ego, I think, until they see a drop in play. And until that happens, he's going to be able to get away with more than the normal player in the Raiders locker room or more than just about any player in the NFL. You know, this is one thing I'll say with my experience with Gruden is, you know, he's not afraid to play favorites a little bit. Not that he doesn't hold everybody accountable, but the superstars on the team are allowed to do some things that the bottom, you know, five or six guys on the roster can't do. I witnessed that in Tampa Bay, whether it was Warren Sapp or Derek Brooks or things like that. So there are different rules, and you know that. There's different rules for everybody in every workplace. If you're at Wall Street, the guy who's, you know, making the most money for that financial firm, he can probably get away with more than, you know, the guys who are lower on the totem pole.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Chris Sims. Let's go to the other side of the bay. Jimmy G struggled last night, right?
Yeah.
And I do think, and maybe you can speak to this. I know you can speak to this as a former quarterback, but a guy who, you know, the game so well, like a lot of it is you're trying, when you haven't played for a year. Like I remember redshirting in college basketball. Like, you know, you're trying to find your rhythm.
Right.
And when the first pass you throw, right, I'm sure the route that everything was like, all right, let's just kind of get on time in rhythm and start marching down the field. The first pass you throw gets batted down.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden you're under a bit of pressure. So I understand that there's a rhythm thing to it. It's the first live action you're seeing. You hurt your knee. You're worried about guys being underneath your legs. But was that just a guy who was not in rhythm? Or is there greater cause for concern that maybe Jimmy Garoppolo isn't the guy he's being deemed to be?
Well, I think there's a little of that right off the bat, right? I mean, it's still a guy that's got a limited sample size as far as playing quarterback in the NFL. And you know, I think between New England pedigree and the way, you know, the season ended in the 2017 season with them winning their last six games, do I think he was a little overrated and put on a pedestal? Certainly, yes. I mean, he got paid like he was one of the best quarterbacks in football at that time, and it only started like 9 football games. So I think that was that leads to maybe higher expectations than what are realistic. I'm not panicked about Jimmy G. I think, Doug, you made a lot of good points there. I mean, you know, we always hear that phrase, right? Like the game slows down or the game's fast for him right now. And, hey, this is the NFL, and I don't care who you are. When you're out of the game for as long as he was out and not around, you know, guys coming around the edge and actually trying to tear your head off for real and all of that, you're being disrespectful to the sport if you think you're just going to come in there and, oh, I'm going to wing it around the football field and go, you know, 20 for 25 and 300 yards. No, that's not going to happen. Last night looked like a guy who, yes, was knocking off some rust, okay? Let's not forget this was a team that they scrimmaged against all week long. I would not be shocked if a Vic Fangio had a few wrinkles in his defensive game plan or they start to figure out some of the tendencies that the 49ers offense wants to run because they've seen it all week, and I don't think Kyle Shanahan and company were specifically game planning, trying to, you know, come up or show the majority of their offense just for preseason game number 2. So all of those things, yes, he was a little rusty, definitely. Was I a little concerned with the fact of, hey, the ball didn't pop out of his hand all that well. Okay, yeah, it certainly did not look great. He gets his feet flat and lazy at times, doesn't step into throws. I think that bothered me more than anything. But, you know, like you said, it is a guy who's getting back in the flow. It's the first time he's been out in live action. He's thinking about his front leg, which is a torn ACL with a brace on it. You're trying to protect that. You're trying to get some timing and rhythm, and it certainly was not a good start. But I'm not going to be panicked yet. I'd like to see one more game and a little bit more evidence, and I think there'll be a lot of growth in the next 5 days from Jimmy Garoppolo.
Former Texas star and starting quarterback in the NFL, Chris Sims, of course, NBC Sports, joining us. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Tell me if you feel like Aaron Rodgers doesn't want to play in the preseason. Like, you read all of his quotes, and he basically said, I'm kind of paraphrasing here, like, if we score in the preseason, we don't score in the preseason, it doesn't matter. We've been in live action. We have plenty of time. We've been at OTAs. I get the sense he just, it's almost him saying, I don't want to play in the preseason. He referenced the Rams not playing their stars. Is that what you think he's getting at?
I do think in a roundabout way. I think he realizes, hey, I might, you know, have to get out there just to, you know, this is one of those things that's, it's really not about Aaron Rodgers. It's really just about making the coaches feel comfortable, right? And that's why coaches can be. They can be very, you know, I don't know, for lack of a better phrase, a little anal and, oh gosh, we just want you out there to see what it looks like in totality. And Aaron Rodgers is like, hey, listen, this ain't my first rodeo. Don't you worry. When the lights come on, I'll throw lasers all over the field and do that. And, of course, you can get a lot of useful reps through practice and, you know, full team periods, and it might be live, and he's got to make certain audibles or do certain things at the line of scrimmage that maybe are a little new to him. But I don't think this is anything big deal as far as this change in this offense. Yeah, there you got to get the audible thing figured out, which I'm sure they will. But I think Aaron Rodgers, at the end of the day, he's perfectly comfortable not playing. I think he's just like a Brady or some of the other quarterbacks we see in football, Ben Roethlisberger. They just have so much experience. They're so talented that they're not ones that need the reps during the preseason to feel comfortable in the week one of the season. So I'm with you. I tend to think he doesn't really want to do it and probably certainly didn't want to start off against that Baltimore Ravens defense in Baltimore. But this week, I think he knows that it's probably important to Matt LaFleur and the coaches. He gets out there and gets to play the Raiders defense, which I think will be a lot easier to handle than Baltimore.
Chris Sims joining us, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I'm sure by now you've read Baker's comments. It should be pointed out that Baker provided some context to the comments where he said, hey, I was even surprised that I went number one. Nonetheless, talking about somebody else's shop is never seen as good business. But this is Baker, right? Like, this is Baker's like a pro wrestler, man. He like welcomes in. He's like one of the black cap wearing pro wrestlers, where he likes the fans booing him. If you're for him, you're for him. If you're against him, you're against him. And he doesn't care. What do you think of Baker's most recent comments? This one's about Daniel Jones saying he was shocked the Giants drafted him.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with you with a lot you said there. I mean, I don't think Baker overly cares about what the public and everybody thinks of him. I will say this, though. I do think this is out of character for him. I don't think he's been one to call people out that way or talk negatively. You know, the only person I've seen him talk negatively about is himself. I mean, he's self-critical and, you know, he's very self-aware. That way, though, I find it quite refreshing. I mean, when they ask you a question like, what was the one thing you learned in college? And he answers, don't run from the cops. I mean, that's pretty damn funny. I really don't think he thought this was going to be published. This is, to me, looks like a thing of GQ. They come, okay, this is the third person in the NFL. We've seen GQ kind of, I feel, catch by surprise a little bit, where maybe the NFL player doesn't realize the interview has started, and it has, whether it's Jalen Ramsey last year, Odell Beckham Jr. earlier this summer, or Baker Mayfield. I think it's just a little different, and I think that's what caught him. I'm not sure if I'm going to buy the whole out-of-context story and all of that. I mean, that sounds nice, and I don't think he's happy that his name is attached to this, but I think what's happening in this, and it's a little different than NFL journalism, you know, you sit there with, let's just say, a colleague of mine, Peter King, yeah, you might, you know, you know, talk shop a little bit before the interview starts. And you might say a few things where, okay, yeah, I'm going to tell them something that, you know, not a lot of people know. But there's a little bit of an unwritten rule to know that, no, the interview has not started until you put on that recorder and we sit down and here we go. GQ, they don't have to worry about getting the next story with Baker Mayfield. They're not in the NFL media. I mean, unless Baker Mayfield wins two or three Super Bowls down the road, then they might want to get back involved with them. But then he might say, screw you, you burned me at that point. But I think that's more or less what it looks like to me. It looks like GQ hang out for the day with Baker Mayfield. He thinks they're just hanging. Sounds like Daniel Jones and the Giants came up on the screen. He made a comment not thinking that an interview was going on, and GQ ran with it, and now he's been burned by it. And I don't think he wanted this attached to his name. I certainly say that. And as brash and as honest as he is, and I love him, he has not been a guy to throw people under the bus. And this is one I think that he's legitimately a little ticked off about.
The Browns and the Bears are the two teams getting the most action in terms of reaching a Super Bowl.
Crazy.
And I know that the Bears, we draw the parallel to the Rams, right? Where Trubisky goes from a guy who looks below average as a quarterback to having a really solid year within a system kind of tailor-made for what he does.
Right.
And they lose their first home playoff game, much the way the Rams did 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But I also think we're not looking at that division. The Packers were a disaster. I think the Lions will be better. I think the Vikings should be better in year two with Kirk Cousins, assuming they stay healthy. And I just think I love Mitch Trubisky and what he brings attitude wise, but he's just not that accurate. He's just not that guy. Am I crazy to think that the fans' love affair with the Bears is greater than NFL analysts like yourself love affair with the Bears?
Yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more. I do like the Bears football team. I mean, there's not a lot to dislike about the team. And I think, hey, I mean, if we're going to be totally honest, I am a believer in Mitchell Trubisky, but, you know, to what you're saying, I still think that's one of the big question marks about the team and about him in general. First of all, he's going to be unfairly held up to a standard throughout his career, which I don't like. Because why? Because he was drafted before Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. Okay, well, first thing is, don't blame Mitchell Trubisky for that. Blame Ryan Pace, the GM. That's not his fault that he was drafted in front of them and they are flourishing. Second of all, let's not forget, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes took over teams that were playoff football teams already, and they got to take over that. Now, the Bears are extremely good, but to what you're saying, that's the one thing we haven't seen, that just surgical dissection in the pass game. We see, ooh, moments where we go, ooh, that was a great throw. Wow, look at that. Or, wow, this kid's really athletic. He is one of the best running quarterbacks in all of football. But when you start to play the upper echelon teams, you know, in the playoffs and in January, you can't depend on running around. The name of the game is still what you see from Brady and Rodgers, standing in the pocket, making good decisions, making big-time football throws. And that is one piece of the puzzle we haven't seen from Trubisky yet. I do think he can do it. I think the second year in the system, I think with his talent, and then, of course, a guy like Matt Nagy, who's one of the better minds in football, I guess I'm saying is I would be shocked if we don't see maybe that next step up or a little growth from Mitchell Trubisky.
Chris,
but all your points
us
about that division, it is going to be better. And the Packers are going to have a run game and a defense for the first time in Aaron Rodgers' career, too, to where I think can make things very interesting as well.
Give me one team. Look, we have a tendency in national radio, and you know with Pro Football Talk, to focus on Antonio Brown, Cowboys, Rodgers, Browns. Give me a team that you think is a pretty damn good football team. We're just not talking enough about because there's just not a lot of chatter coming out of their camp.
Okay, I'm going to throw out four, okay, that I
good.
Like that
Better.
Fit that, and then you could go, which one, or you can ask me what about which one. I would say this. The Jets, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Buffalo Bills, and the Carolina Panthers. Those are four teams that I feel like are the Jets and Buffalo. Not going to say they're going to the playoffs, but I think they're going to be a real pain in the butt and verge of wild card type conversations late in December. Jacksonville, I'd say watch out for. That defense is still real,
finally,
and now they're going to have an offense.
Yep.
And then Carolina, I think Carolina, just look at the way they were playing before Cam Newton got hurt last year. They're big. They're physical. Norv Turner figured out a system that fits Cam Newton and the rest of the weapons they have in that offense. Those are four that I just go, ooh, nobody's talking about them, but watch out for these teams.
Am I crazy to say this? And you feel free to shout me down.
Okay.
I think we might say Christian McCaffrey's the best back in the league by the end of the year.
Ooh, I think we're going to say he's in the top three, okay. Certainly. There's this guy in New York, okay, who wears number 26,
yep.
Who he is amazing. He's I'm one of the best I've ever seen already. I think he is the best running back in football. But, I mean, I hear you with Christian McCaffrey. His skill set really fits what they're trying to do there in Carolina. I mean, it's almost like its own concoction of an offense because of Cam Newton and his abilities. And, oh, it's speed sweeps. It's fake speed sweeps. It's read options. It's bootlegs. It's play actions. It's double reverses. You don't know what the hell to expect. And McCaffrey is so versatile. I'm with you. He's one of the greatest weapons in football. But it's going to take a lot for me to see. I mean, it's going to take a below average year from Saquon Barkley, which I don't see happening.
All right, that's a fair retort. Last thing, Chris Sims joining us. Obviously, you covered Notre Dame football, and yeah. Look, the Irish, because they got pummeled by Clemson. I do think people have lost sight of the fact that the program has turned and it's back. You know, in preseason number 9, and Ian Book is back.
Yeah,
third week of the season, they go down to Athens, and you got Fromm against Book, which should be tremendous. What about the rest of the Irish? Like, the offensive line has been good. There have been years in which, when they don't have suspensions, they have the skill position players. How good is this version of Notre Dame?
I still think this is a really quality football team. Am I going to sit here and tell you that I think that they're going to compete for the national championship? No, I'm not going to say that right now. I think there's a few unproven commodities on the football team. They've lost a lot of good players. I mean, you know, they lost three really good defensive players last year in the draft. One of them a first-rounder in Jerry Tillery. You know, Julian Love in the secondary. Tavon Coney at middle linebacker, really good. Hey, Miles Boykin, you've been hearing all that chatter at Baltimore. So there's just some positions where I got to see first, but they will not be outclassed by anybody. That I can promise you. You are right. They are back. And let's not forget, Alabama got steamrolled by that Clemson football team, too. You know, I do. And I'm kind of sick of it. Like, I constantly have to stick up for Notre Dame because people are like, oh, they just get attention because they're Notre Dame. Or these kids are, you know, they're just smart. There's nothing special physically. No, there's studs on that football team. I mean, Quentin Nelson, Mike McGlinchey, you know, the names we just mentioned. There is certainly enough talent. The quarterback, Ian Book, is very good. Athletic, can really throw the football. I'm not saying they go down there and beat Georgia, but would be seriously shocked if they got outclassed and blown away in that fashion. Let's not forget, too, Doug, in that Clemson game, it was, and I might be a little off here, I believe it was 9-3 with a minute and 58 seconds left in the first half, and they had a corner go down, and they kind of messed up and had a turnover, and all of a sudden they were down 19-3. That game was a lot closer. A few plays here or there, I think we would have been talking differently, but either way, Clemson was in a class of its own last year, but Notre Dame is not to be taken lightly, that's for sure.
I really like talking football with you, my man.
Hey,
you do a great
man.
Job. Chris Sims, of course, check him out on Pro Football Talk, all things NBC Sports. Chris, take care.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
This guy just got done. I believe they won the quarterback challenge, I think, with the L.A. Chargers. Of course, his former team. Now, his current team is the New Orleans Saints in two straight seasons of crazy endings and bad luck, and they're back at it again. Drew Brees joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. You guys do these post-practice competitions. It's not just you and the rest of you, the quarterbacks on your crew, but also you bring in some linemen and other people. Who won between you and the Chargers?
You know, they actually, it's been back and forth. We've practiced against those guys for 3 years now, so we've had some pretty intense competitions over the last couple of years. And it always gets more interesting. But yeah, they got us this year, unfortunately. It came down to the wire. But we had a lot of fun.
Drew, what's this preseason been like for you in terms of reps? Because, you know, we talked to some people with the Chargers, and they said they've dialed back some of Phillips' reps because there was some arm fatigue last year because of age. There's been discussion about Tom Brady. Obviously, you're not a spring chicken, but you're still energized to do it. Have you cut down the reps at all in an effort to stay fresh for later in the season?
I mean, I think there's a balance, right? You know, but I feel like during camp, I really enjoy the reps. I enjoy getting as many reps as I can. I think during the day, I think there is a time when, hey, you know, like a day off here is good or a day off there. I mean, just to kind of recharge, you know. But like once I get warmed up and I'm out there, man, I want to take all the reps, you know. And then I feel like I get stronger as the season goes on. As a result of that,
Drew Brees joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Is there any? Do you take any amount of joy or glee in that the new rule with the pass interference and the ability to challenge pass interference was because of that one call? Like, it doesn't bring it back, but it's like, look, Tom Brady gets hit below the, you know, in the knee, and you change the league changes its rule. You guys get pass interference that's not called, the league changes its rule. Do you take any joy in that at all?
I mean, not really. I think, we get, you know, it doesn't change anything as far as what happened. But, I mean, I think everyone is constantly trying to make the game better. You know, you're trying to make the game safer, trying to make the game better, trying to make it more fair, trying to make it more accurate. That's the intent, right? I think when it comes to this specific rule, though, I still think there's some gray area as far as, you know, what is pass interference and what's not. I think that's up to interpretation as to who's looking at it. You know, if you ask 17 NFL crews what pass interference is, I think, you know, just when you look at the amount that's called by each crew, you know, some crews call a lot, some don't call as many. You know, so obviously there's a different interpretation there, right? So now, you know, those decisions, if they're challenged, Al Riveron and his team in New York. And so, you know, you hope that they'll just be a pretty consistent determination as to what's being called and what's not, you know, when it comes to those challenges. But at the end of the day, it's still a judgment call. It's still up for interpretation. It's not...
Yeah. Drew Brees joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. You put out some awesome videos of your kids. How much thought goes into that?
you know, just like you're saying, just what I post?
Yeah. Like, you had the one where they're diving into the couch, you know, and I mean, it goes viral and everybody's talking about it. Like, do you guys come up with an idea, or is it just like you're doing something fun and so your wife grabs your phone and decides to film it? Like, is there a thought that goes into it?
That's totally it. Everything's off the cuff. Like, it's just kind of like daily life, you know, it's just filming daily life or stuff that happens, whether it's funny or whether you think fans would get a kick out of it, you know, it's just... so much of it is just life as it's happening, you know, just having fun.
Drew, Michael Thomas obviously got paid, and he's a unique dude, right? Like, he's not a burner, and he's big but not a giant. Obviously, the team is all in on his talents and his fit for your offense and for how you play. From your perspective, you played with some really talented wide receivers. Marcus Colston obviously had a great career, other guys with you. What is it about Michael Thomas that is different, unique, and special at his position?
Every rep is a game rep, whether it's, you know, something as simple as, you know, a route on air or a route one-on-one period against the DB in practice or a game. I mean, it's all the same to him. It's just like that level of focus and sense of urgency. And, you know, that's why, you know, what you see on Sunday is what I see every day in practice.
Taysom comes in and, obviously lit it up this past weekend, but obviously now you guys use him, in red zone packages and special packages, especially third and short. Did Sean have to talk you into that? Like, what's that conversation like in terms of, like, you're a first ballot Hall of Famer, okay? You're an MVP, you're a Super Bowl champion, and yet at certain down and distances at this point in your career, you're either splitting out wide or even coming off the field. What was the decision like from Sean, and how did he relate it to you to change kind of these packages with your team going back to last year?
Well, listen, man, whatever's best for the team, obviously, and with Taysom's skill set, you know, that's a real, just a rare, you know, he's a rare talent and a rare athlete with the ability to play the quarterback position and throw the ball the way that he does, but also run it. And, you know, he comes on the field and you don't know if he's playing quarterback or running back or receiver or tight end. I mean, he can just do so many things. So, listen, at the end of the day, our job is to score points and to stay on the field as long as we can, and he helps us through that, so I'm all for it.
You and Tom Brady have essentially the same contract, right? Like, it's up at the end of this year. So I think everybody just wants to know, what should we think of Drew Brees in the future in terms of longevity? How long you want to do this?
I'm just taking it 1 year at a time. You know, I took that approach starting a couple of years ago, and I've had more fun playing the game and really enjoyed it more and had a ton of success doing it just by taking that approach. And so honestly, I don't want to take anything for granted. I want to enjoy every second of it, stay in the moment, and that's been really effective for me taking that approach.
Star quarterback Drew Brees joining us on behalf of Jimmy John's as part of the Home in the Zone contest. Jimmy John's will select individual outside of the prize Jimmy John's delivery zone and buy them a house within a nearby zone up to $250,000. And you can apply up to October 4th at Dream Home Inside the Zone. You were a franchisee 2011. You went back. Go back 2011. Give me the approach, Mike. Yeah. Why did you decide to partner with Jimmy John's, even going back then?
I started off just loving Jimmy John's, right? I grew up in Texas. We didn't have Jimmy John's at the time there. And I go to the Midwest, to Purdue University in 1997, West Lafayette, Indiana. And that was my first exposure to Jimmy John's. And I'd order it to the dorm room like three times a week. You know, I lived on it. So then I get drafted by the Chargers and know Jimmy John's in San Diego, come to New Orleans, know Jimmy John's. So the only way I get Jimmy John's is by going back to Purdue, right? So I go back twice a year and eat it for just about every meal. So finally in 2010, I'm sitting there eating a number 9 in one of the Jimmy John's on campus, and I'm like, all right, that's it. I got to bring Jimmy John's to New Orleans.
Man,
so I call my buddy who was a teammate of mine at Purdue who worked for Jimmy John's corporate, and I said, all right, what do I need to do to bring a franchise down to New Orleans? He said, your timing's perfect. We just opened it up as a franchise territory. Are you serious? And I was like, yes. So we started the process, and a year later, we opened up our first Jimmy John's location here in New Orleans, 2011. And now we have 9 locations here. We have 9 in South Bend, Indiana, continuing to grow and expand as we speak. So it's been a really successful venture. It's been a lot of fun. Jimmy John's is a great company to work with and a great brand to represent. And so through that, you know, delivery is our specialty. Man, we've perfected that process. It's what we do. And we wanted to come up with a fun contest campaign to basically get one of our Jimmy John's superfans into our delivery zone by basically buying them a house up to $250,000.
That's awesome.
Inside one of our Jimmy John's delivery zones. So people can go to jimmyjohns.com to enter the competition. It requires filling out a 250-word you know, little essay or paragraph as to why you feel like you should be the one chosen to live inside the Jimmy John's delivery zone.
Last thing, okay, so I'm looking at a number 9. Salami, capicola, ham, and provolone. That's just like a meat sandwich, right? Most important thing, like, do you go old school white bread? Do you go wheat? Do you scoop the bread? Do you go no bread? You know, especially at this point in time in your career, what is your bread selection?
You know what? I love the Jimmy John's bread. The French bread is the absolute best. But I have been gluten-free recently, and so I actually do the Unwich. So I just go no bread.
Yeah.
So I go number 9 Unwich with hot peppers, no cheese. That's my go-to. I usually get 2 of them with the barbecue chips and the pickle.
Do you put the chips inside the meat, right? So you get the little crunch in the meat, or you do the chips in the bag?
Well, whether it's inside the sandwich or not, I'm still eating the chips right alongside the number 9. So I'm getting the same effect.
Drew, love watching you play football. Thanks so much for sharing with us this contest, and best of luck this season. Hopefully it ends differently than the past 2 years, but it's been an unbelievable run you guys have been on. Thanks for joining us.